Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. More than 150 boxes of documents have arrived at Harvard, containing some 50 years of work from the iconic counterculture activist Angela Davis.
When you talk about a revolution, most people think violence, without realizing that the real content of any kind of revolutionary thrust lies in the principles and the goals that you're striving for, not in the way you reach them.
That is Angela Davis speaking in the documentary The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975. Radcliffe's Schlesinger Library has acquired a trove of Davis's documents, letters, papers, and photos, hence the 150 boxes. Jane Kamensky is the director of the Schlesinger Library, and she joins us to talk about the significance of this collection. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Deborah. Great to be with you.
So Professor Davis retired from the University of California at Santa Cruz in 2008. Remind us of the significance of Angela Davis.
Angela Davis becomes a worldwide celebrity very early in her life, soon after she is engaged in her graduate studies, and is a very sought-after young assistant professor herself in 1968-1969 when she's first on the job market, and the place that lands her is UCLA. No sooner had she arrived in the classroom at UCLA, teaching enormous classes. When you see images from her, the early days of her teaching, there are people almost hanging from the rafters in huge lecture halls at UCLA. Ronald Reagan, who was then governor of California, called for her removal because she was a member of the Communist Party. Her notoriety began in 1969 when she was but 25 years old. In the years immediately following, she was the subject of an international manhunt when guns that she had bought or was said to have bought were alleged to have been used in a murder that was related to a prison uprising in Northern California. Mm-hmm. She was imprisoned for 2 years. The campaign to free Angela Davis resulted in Free Angela marches around much of the world. So even before she turned 30, she was as much of a household name as any radical, I think, that came out of that very revolutionary moment of upheaval in U.S. history.
You know, we have a piece of tape from Angela Davis speaking to documentary filmmaker Barry Callaghan in 1970 while she was in jail in California, and I'd like to just listen to that right here.
People get very upset when they hear that black people have weapons, their own weapons. And it's so hypocritical because they fail to realize the very real things which force black people to arm themselves.
Jane Kamensky, that almost sounds like something someone could say today, but that was spoken by Angela Davis in 1970 while she was imprisoned in California.
I'll tell you, one of the really interesting things I hear in that clip, Deborah, mm-hmm. is already in her voice, you can hear the kind of continental influence. She doesn't sound like a Southerner, right? She's raised in Birmingham, completes high school in New York, goes to college at the then radical hotbed of international thought that is Brandeis University, from which she graduates Magna and Phi Beta Kappa in 1965. She's a French major. She has training at the Sorbonne while she's an undergraduate. She attends two different universities in Germany, one East and one West. Hmm. And I think you can already hear that in her voice as well as in her thought when she's talking about revolution in 1970. One of the things that really distinguishes her from a lot of the homegrown American radicals with whom she's in conversation, Black Panther Party, for example, is that she has this formal training in European thought. She's a philosopher. That brings a different tilt to her understanding of what revolution means, of what the American experiment and its discontents in the wake of the incredibly charged year of 1968 means. It reminds me, as a former Brandeis faculty member, of what a crucible Brandeis was in those years as a place for learning European traditions of both academic philosophy and revolutionary thought.
You know, well, let's contrast that a little bit. So we heard that piece of tape from 1970 while Angela Davis was in jail in California. Now we have a piece of tape from 1974 when she spoke with radio station KQED about free speech. Let's listen to that.
Those who would call for the right to speak freely in order to openly prevent others from having rights and liberties that are guaranteed them by the Constitution. I mean, I think that is a contradiction in terms. I mean, if you're going to allow somebody to be free to advocate genocide, if you're going to allow somebody to be free to organize genocide, to organize murder and racism, then that doesn't make any sense at all. I think it's very clear.
Jane Kamensky, what do you hear in that particular clip of Angela Davis?
Well, the notion of free speech, especially in campus situations, has been one that we've been fighting over for 50 years. Mm-hmm. She's participating there in a debate that is still ongoing. 1974 is the year that she published her autobiography, a sort of iconic piece of our collection. Her autobiography was edited by her since good friend Toni Morrison, who was then working a day job as an editor at Random House whilst beginning to lift her fiction career off the ground at night. So I'm sure that that's the context of the interview, is the publication of this incredibly significant piece of radical autobiography, which I hope the placement of the collection at Schlesinger will inspire further research on and restore to conversation with documents like the autobiography of Malcolm X. Hmm.
So let's talk about the collection itself. What's in it and how important is it? First, what are some of the things that struck you as part of this collection?
So as you said, 150 boxes very thoroughly documents the period of Professor Davis's arrest, incarceration, trial, and immediate aftermath. In the wake of those tumultuous events in the early 1970s, she lived a very engaged, public-facing life, looking in a lot of directions within the United States as well as internationally. And her activism around the world is very well documented. She became central to the prison abolition movement, a real founder of the prison abolition movement in the wake of her own incarceration experience. And even before it, she is a strong voice for prison reform. So a sort of long arc, a 50-year long arc of activism around incarceration in the United States is there, including organizational papers of a bunch of organizations she was affiliated with or founded. She did a radio show called Angela Speaks. That rare audio is in the collection, and we look forward to making that available. Records of her political campaigns when she ran on a CPUSA ticket for office. The incredible number of letters that she received during the period of her imprisonment and that she has continued to receive since. I think one of the most exciting things for us, in addition to the many directions the collection faces, both globally and nationally, is the controversial nature of Professor Davis's career. She takes us as a library into reaches of American radicalism and global radicalism that scholars and other researchers need to reckon with, need to contest, need to contextualize. And in that way, one of the exciting things about this new acquisition is the sort of new relief it will cast on extant holdings of the Schlesinger, which include, you know, rich collections in liberal feminism in the 1960s, in radical feminism in the 1960s, in black women's feminism and other activisms, increasingly in conservative women's collections. So I think Davis's papers will revivify scholarship in other areas of American politics, public policy, thinking about women, gender, sexuality, race, and their intersections in the 20th century.
What do we learn about her as a person, about Angela Davis, the person in this collection?
I think some people are relentless documenters of their own interior lives. I'm working now on a project with a collection where somebody has documented nearly every day of her life from the age of 12. This is not a collection like that. This is a collection that faces out. I think you know, whether that is a character of the papers or a character of the individual is something that that we don't know. I suspect that having come to international notoriety at such a tender age, that Professor Davis has kept her private life very private. So I think the collection will be indispensable to anybody in future who would write the not the autobiography, but the biography of Angela Davis. It's not a collection that is full of confessional texts.
But it does include a diary that she kept during her trial, isn't that right?
It does. It does include a diary that she kept during her imprisonment. And, of course, the autobiography is a you know, is a personal reflection, but she has lived and continues to live a life that is enormously public-spirited and other-directed, and I think a life of engagement and action rather than self-scrutiny is what researchers will find in the papers.
You know, in the preface to her autobiography, she wrote, future generations need to recognize that organizing masses of people for justice can indeed make a difference. So at a time when we're seeing these young people in Florida, you know, organizing to try to change gun laws, is there a message for them and for others who may be organizing that can be learned from this collection?
I think it's an enormously hopeful collection. Though Angela Davis has stared down some of the thorniest and most intractable problems in American and 20th century, 21st century global history, her engagement, her level of commitment, her sense that people have enormous potential when we band together, comes through in the many, many facets of her work. And that, I think, ultimately is why she made what is for everybody the difficult decision of putting their personal papers into public hands, right, is to continue that work of organizing and engagement toward a better future with the generations of scholars who engage the papers in future.
Did you actually speak with Angela Davis when Harvard was looking at this collection?
We did. We have talked to her over many months in pursuit of this collection. Collecting for a library is a kind of extended courtship, you know, a discussion of what fits and why the context we could provide here at the Schlesinger is the, you know, we would say the logical, best, most fertile one for her work. So she came to visit the library for a day in the fall of 2016, and I think that was crucial to giving her a sense of where her literary and archival legacy would live, you know, who she would be next to in the vaults. We pulled material from our collections that included her in various ways, from friends, confrères and consoeurs who she had worked with, also from the world of ideas with which she engaged, not just activists, but scholars like the foundational women's historian Gerda Lerner, people who had been really important to forming her as an intellectual. And it was thrilling to take her through the library.
All right. Jane Kamensky, director of the Schlesinger Library at the Radcliffe Institute at Harvard. They've just received more than 150 boxes of the archives of Angela Davis. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Deborah.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.